Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, the Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast. So if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Crypto Podcast and also the Awakening Podcast. And you'll find the awakeningpodcast.org and the cryptopodcast.org. And you'll understand in a minute why I'm actually going to put this one out on both of them. Because my guest from South Carolina, he's the author of several books, co-founder of the Event Experience Future Frontiers. He's the founder of Social Evolution, an organization dedicated to liberating humanity and solving social problems through innovation. Please welcome Max Borders.
Oh, thank you so much, Roy.
So, I mean, like I've seen like the books that you've written, I don't know, is it six? How many have you got at this stage?
Yeah, let's see. I think five.
Yeah, you're like me. You get to so many podcasts and you're kind of thinking, how many is it now? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm working on another one right now too, which I should be ashamed of myself, but there we are.
No, very good. So, I mean, I mentioned kind of bullet points of what you're doing. Oh, you might just kind of let the listeners know a little bit more about you and how you kind of got into everything.
Yeah, I think probably a good place to start with your audience, given their interest in crypto, is the idea of expanding personal sovereignty relative to authorities or state power. The Bitcoin white paper was an example. I like to say that the Bitcoin white paper was an example of a piece of technological specs that were dripping with morality and meaning. Right, mission, morality, and meaning. And I like to use all these M's to describe my approach to these things. I think we have in the crypto space, if we have an army of developers who don't have a sense of mission, morality, or meaning, they will become adrift. They will forget what the cryptocurrency space is supposed to be about, and that is expanding human sovereignty. So in that sense, I am a cheerleader for cryptocurrencies, but more, I'm a cheerleader for what cryptocurrencies represent for human liberation. That's my jam.
Very good. So I suppose let's kind of, I mean, you mentioned like with the white paper. I mean, just some people are saying that Bitcoin kind of came about because of the crash in 2008, but it kind of came up about that time. And I mean, if you look at programming and stuff, it takes a bit longer. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, there's some people saying this from the NSA because there's like a white paper on that and that it's all government controlled. So I suppose let's kind of start on that one.
Well, I remember there's a story. I've never actually looked it up on the Genesis block, but as I understand it, there is a reference to another central bank action on the Bank of England that was put on the Genesis block, as if to say, this is why we're doing this. Now, one cannot say whether that, who Satoshi is, much less whether that was Satoshi or part of an early team of people. They called themselves Satoshi. I can't say. Nobody can, or those who can probably don't want to say. That being said, I think there is a very strong case to be made that this was a response to the excesses of 2008, where the taxpayers, through debt spending and taxation, bailed out the richest financial institutions in the world. And of course, those financial institutions were arbitraging based on government policy around the world, but particularly in the United States around housing. I remember at the time the Irish got it pretty bad. I'm sure you remember that as well.
I lost everything. I lost my personal. I like I hit all my Polish. I went from kind of making 5 million to be personally liable for 5 million, including losing my 3 Irish properties and my personal house and all my belongings. And it was all done fraudulently. Like, I went to the High Court. I had all the documentation proving that they put all the assets together and everything. They could never respond to my affidavit. And I went to like 10 different judges. They just kept kind of moving it. In the end, I knew I was getting whacked because the guy wasn't letting anybody get information. For example, there was somebody in there that said, we were overcharged by KPMG, something like 15,000 interest. And they said, when did that happen? 3 years ago. You should have took it up with them then. Bang. Rule in favor of the bank. And like, I was seeing women there, like one woman, she was had a piece of paper. She was crying. She said, my husband died from stress. I'm really sorry. Bang. Rule in favor of the bank. Not one person. I had an offer on one of my properties. And basically, I said full and final settlement, and they didn't accept it. And they sold it cheaper and came after me for the extra. And I didn't get interest and penalties, but I still lost in the thing. And I was the only one that actually got a so-called victory. And it was like...
Well, I know that you're meant to be interviewing me today, but I have to ask, is this what got you into cryptocurrency? Or is it part of it?
It was like the journey of kind of one is my mission is to expose everything because I saw bailiffs being fraudulent. Like bailiffs were actually working with valuers and everything. They were bribing people in the room. And this is an international thing. And people don't believe something like that could happen. My properties that were sold, I got no information about it. I didn't even get details when they were going up for auction, when they were being selling. But what's happened, and I think a lot of people know now, they sold them all to the likes of BlackRock and everything. So now they're massive landlords and they've got different kind of tax. They don't pay tax. There's all these little loops. Tax Haven is a book there that I highly recommend people to read, all the tax loops that they do. But basically, then they increase the rents. The tenants have no rights. So it was a land grab and it's happening again. And it's a sick situation.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, I do think that Bitcoin and what followed that in terms of the cryptocurrency space. Now, we've had a couple of winters, crypto winters, and your audience is fully aware of this. I would say between 2017 and 2021, maybe even later, we lost a lot of time. We lost a lot of time to... And I'm not saying the technology is bad and it can't be useful when applied in other directions and applied in other ways, but we lost a lot of time to Bored Apes and bullshit. In other words, fighting back against the unholy alliance between corporations and the government officials is what every developer in the cryptocurrency space should be doing right now. They should make it their mission to be paladins bestride white horses who are going to come in and try to change the game. If not, they're going to be subsumed into this Borg that is the corporate state. And if you don't think that this is happening, very soon we're going to start seeing... And I know you've probably talked about this on your show, central bank digital currencies and other measures that will transform our governments into more than just surveillance states, but something more akin to a Sino-formed social credit system. So the technology that the crypto developers are working on, it is absolutely essential that they not only stop thinking about what tokens are mooning and this and that, but really taking a look at the technologies that are going to allow people to flourish and reignite that sense of mission that Satoshi brought to the table, because you better believe in the next decade, they are coming to put us to treat us as timid herds, frankly. And if we act like timid herds, we will be unable to escape the matrix at this point.
And like loads of people are kind of talking about the credit score system in China, and they'll say, you know, oh, you can't get on the bus, you can't do this, you can't fly, you can't everything. But I mean, like, There's already accredited score system in the States and across the world, which are finance. Like you have a credit system, and if you don't meet it, you don't get funding for a mortgage or whatever you want to do.
That's right. And all they need to do is begin to integrate your habits, practices, speech acts, and so on online that they don't agree with. In other words, once there is a people thought of no big deal that PayPal, for example, started to withhold funds from people in their businesses because of online speech, or Patreon, freezing accounts from on Patreon because of political views that they didn't share. There is an infestation at all levels of government, all levels of higher education, and all levels of many tech companies and corporations that mean there is going to be an authoritarian network. There's already an authoritarian network forming among these, what we think of as separate or siloed institutions. They are no longer siloed. Therefore, we have to network ourselves. We have to lateralize our relationships by the millions so that we are able to innovate subversively. And what I mean by that is technologists have a threefold mandate with subversive innovation. They need to reduce the cost, transaction costs, and collaboration costs. In other words, make it cheaper to do, to collaborate in any form or fashion, whether that's transactional or purely collaborative. They need to raise the cost of predation and parasitism, which is what third parties are trying to either take your money or suppress your speech or whatever. And finally, they need to reduce the cost of exiting a system that isn't working for them, just like you did, going to your country of choice. But to do that in the cryptographic cloud as well, so that at multiple layers of the stack, it becomes easier and easier for people to leave systems that aren't working for them, or even or worse.
Like you mentioned PayPal, like most people aren't even aware the percentages that they're trying. I remember that, and it was brilliant that people actually stood up and kind of told them, hey, you're not controlling our money, you don't own that money. And you know, the fact that they that was stopped straight away just showed the power of the people. But like, I wish they were knocked off the planet, because like sometimes they're taking 5.7% or even 6-point-odd percent, or sometimes even 10%. There's times the person is paying the fees sending it to you, and then they charge you as well. And if you're moving it around, which happens sometimes, somebody might have a VA who in turn has got their people working from, they're just taking so much for doing none of the work. And if it was crypto, like I could send you a couple of hundred million Bitcoin, and it would cost a tiny fraction. But yet, like if you look at the likes of Revolut or even Wise, Wise is a fraction. Revolut is even cheaper. If it's Wise to Wise or Revolut to Revolut, it's free, it's instant. Yet PayPal, who have a major monopoly, are fleecing it. Plus you've got like Visa and MasterCard, who are charging people like about 3% plus, you know, 30 cent or something like that. And like, I remember talking to a guy, he was the Ferrari dealer in Portugal. And I was like, they don't charge a 3%. Yes, they do. So, like, same thing. They're making massive money. And it's like, we need to take that away because they're not using it for good use. Like, you know, like,
no.
And I would love to see an alternative. And, like, I mean, what we see with the finances is like kind of know your customer and all this. You have to give them so much information. Like, the dumbest thing I see in my life is that I have to give a utility bill. And it's like, if you're kind of traveling around, or you just don't want to have a utility bill, or you're renting and you have it's in the person's name, or there's a lot, especially in the crypto world, there's a load of nomads, so they don't have that. Your passport doesn't do. So if you want to get a utility bill, you have to go in and bring in your passport. They just make your life so just tasks the whole time, and just it's simple. I can buy so much, even in the buying the crypto, I can buy $10,000 worth. No, try to sell it. It ain't that easy. The way that they're doing it, if you're trying to change, like the whole thing is like scammy. And if we look at
say, it's all connected to the fiat currency. So the likes of BlackRock, Vanguard, and all these other corporations, they're getting in buying the thing. They've got the printing press, and then they control the market. And, like, you know, it's so dangerous, and people aren't aware of how this is can go down.
All they see is number go up. They need to be very, very suspicious of this. And we need a mass education campaign right now. I mean, the idea is that with the ETFs is that there's a tax deferred ability to save through or to, I don't know what you want to call it, but to house resources in the form of Bitcoin, right? So these are just passed in the United States. And BlackRock is one of the major stewards of this capital, but it's a devil's bargain, because in exchange for that favorable tax treatment, someone else is stewarding your crypto. And when that happens, it's, you know, not your keys, not your coins, right? As the saying goes. So there needs to be a mass education campaign about how to do this. Now, in terms of how to solve the problem of fiat to crypto on ramps, this has been a perennial problem since the beginning. You know, we depend on these big exchanges, and they're good for that. They're a good interface point for that, in the sense that it's possible. But these are regulatory choke points for the powerful, and they're going to use that against us eventually. And those who are major holders of cryptocurrency are going to be major whales and market manipulators whenever they want to be, if your coins are in their custody. So I see bad things on the horizon without sufficient education, and I'm glad that you exist to give folks that education, frankly.
Like, I've touched on kind of the tax side of things as well. And I mean, if you kind of know how to do it, we shouldn't be paying any tax, because that whole system is kind of corrupt as well in itself. But the way that they've done it, and the way people comply, and the way they sign their name to things, they know exactly every transaction. They know exactly. They can trace it all. People think that they don't know nothing. They know everything. And they're letting people trade away, and they'll knock on your door and they'll go, you owe us X amount, and people won't have it. And they're just going to lock them all up. And it's like, they're just waiting. I mean, I'm convinced that that's going to happen. I mean, obviously I don't want it to happen, but the whole lot, they push it, they mention it, and then they kind of do the regulation and how this is going to do. You know, like, if you just even trace Gary Gensler, he was in MIT. I remember seeing a course that he done. It was on, but like, if you just kind of look at trace everybody back and how it's done, who's connected to who, it's a rotten pit. And it's like, you know, there's people, they're betting their whole life savings on this, and they just think, no, it's going to half, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. And it could just change overnight. And the amount that we're talking, millions and millions of people could lose everything.
Oh, yeah. And I think this, we are at an inflection point right now. And this is why when I get an opportunity to speak to an audience like yours, I just want to say, you have to gird your loins, and you have to remember why you got into this to start with. And if it was Bored Apes and goofy little NFTs, that's fine. But know your history. Listen to Roy, or talk to Roy about his experience with 2008, 2009, about the powers that be who are colluding corporate and state power to make sure that you lose your shirt and they get it. This is underway right now, and people are asleep at the switch, but especially people in the crypto community. All they want to do is look at their wallet figures going up, but they don't want to understand the deep, deep need for a sense of restoration of virtue, which is, we have to start being virtuous and being a community of virtuous people again. Not just people worried about money. We've got to work on this sense of, what is the mission an ultimate mission of cryptocurrency. And you might think, well, what does that even mean, Max? And my answer would be the ultimate mission of cryptocurrency is to expand the sovereignty of individual people and their families, resisting the intercession of third parties and protecting themselves from their power, from their ability to keep us locked inside a matrix so that we can't escape, because the doors are closing on this. The what I call Sino-forming of America and Europe is underway. And as soon as they make it so that you have to use central bank digital currencies, and as soon as they complete this nexus among organizations where the government can send an email to an NGO, which can send an email to then, or some sort of chat text or whatever, to someone in a social media company, where you and your speech can be taken down, already happening every day, because you dissent in some measure, some way, against the powers that be, against their narratives, because you're a truth seeker, because you're someone who's trying to protect his resources against their grubby mitts. I mean, all of these things, we've got to do this as, and I don't want to sound inordinately populist, but if populism is the way, if populism can be married with crypto, I think that that's probably a good thing. In other words, all of these farmers in Europe who are feeling the oppressive weight of the EU bearing down on them in the name of climate change, you know, all of these farmers are starting to learn how to operate in solidarity. The next layer is getting them into the cryptocurrency scene, getting them responsible, getting them to be hodlers. And, you know, those overlaps, figuring out those overlaps and those interface points between movements that are counterpower, I think is absolutely dead important these days. And I can't emphasize that enough. I probably sound like a fire and brimstone preacher from North Carolina, which is where I'm from, hence the accent. But I guess that makes me a fire and brimstone preacher of cryptocurrency and of human liberation.
Like, I mean, I see they were doing it here. They were doing it all over Europe, the farmers. But I think they need to change their strategy, because, you know, if they're trying to, you know, stop all this crap, you know, like the coast farting is the problem, not, and just taking their land by blocking the streets and the motorways and everything, what's happening is, if you have a child, a baby in the car, and it's 30 degrees or whatever, or if you have an animal or anything, you're hurting your own people. I mean, what I recommend,
even though, them off too,
is go to the logistics centers of all the shopping centers and block that, because immediately the government have to act, because that means nobody gets food. But you're not blocking the motorways, you're just stopping where the whole source is, and that would have more effect than what they're doing. And even though there's people beeping them and supporting them, I mean, I know what it's like, you know, like just being on a motorway for a few hours, 4 hours or something, that's not fun, and nobody should have to actually go through that. So I wish they'd kind of changed their strategy. And I mean, there's a lot of people protesting. It's like, have you ever seen anything that's actually benefited from the way they do it? So, you know, they need to kind of think a bit better, not just them, but any of the protests, like what their whole strategy is.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. The last thing you want to do is anger those who could be your fellow travelers. And maybe, you know, blocking up motorways does that. The original Canadian trucker movement, I think they ended up with their trucks in the middle of Ottawa, the capital. And that strikes me as perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's, I mean, people can just, they can still get around and everything. Yeah. So once you're in the center, because you're basically, you're hitting the government when you're kind of doing the city center. That's the way I see it.
Yep, you're highly visible and so on. In any case, I just, pull a few examples out of my hat. Farmers, other people, these are kind of populist movements that are rising up, and they don't always think of things in terms of what it means to be free or what it means to be, because if tomorrow, if they receive a massive subsidy, they might just be quiet. But the sort of this return to principle, this return to virtue, this return to a sense of common mission, at the very least, the crypto community and the developers that are animating the crypto community, I want to see that energy of 2010, 2011, where Bitcoin was just starting to take off and it captured the imagination and people knew why. That's really, I think, where it's at. If we don't recapture that energy, they're going to wipe us out.
Like you mentioned about the kind of big corporations talking to each other, governments telling who can post and everything. So my awakening got removed from YouTube and I got strikes. And I mean, all the information was actually true. Even on my personal channel, I got 2 strikes. I had to be very careful. The strikes I got was an 84-year-old Holocaust victim and somebody exposing the education system, the unions in the States, which is corrupt. And like when they're...
Oh, totally.
But my crypto one, I never had a strike or anything 8 months ago or something like that, just disappeared. And I was like, because I know I have a team and they were like, we're trying to upload the video. What's happening? And I was like, and it's gone. No information, no nothing. And just a couple of weeks ago, came back up. We've reviewed your thing and it's okay. Like, so that's what you're up against. Plus Linktree, I got Linktree removed. LinkedIn, they blocked me for a week. And Facebook... shadow banning, as well as removing thumbs up and everything. So like we saw what happened with the Canadians with their bank accounts, even the people donating, they started attacking them. I mean, it's gone crazy what's actually happening.
Yeah, it has. And I worry that people, here's what another thing I worry about, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I think most people default to the idea that the other team is going to be our salvation.
I can nip that in the bud straight away for those listening, because
exactly.
In Ireland, we had Fianna Fáil, Fianna Gael, the left and the right for 100 years or whatever it was. Yeah, about 100 mm-hmm. years, nearly 100 years. And then they were losing so much popularity, they came together. And then the Green Party. So the power that's in now at the moment is the left, the right, and the Green Party. And it was a referendum maybe a month, maybe 2 months ago. And every single political party, even the opposition, told the people, vote yes. And everybody voted no. It was like 79% or something like that voted no. And there was only a 20% turnout. So all their cronies, the people that will, do anything for the political party. So it shows that the whole political party in Ireland has less than 10% support. Because that's the way you can look at this. Like, because if they were supporting their political party, they would have went out and voted the way they were told. Even the opposition parties, they all said vote yes. So like that was kind of strange. And the leader of the Irish party resigned. There's all top ministers as well removing from their position. So I think they've kind of realized the gig is up. I'm hoping that's the way it is. But the problem is, even if it goes to another general election, there's not one political party in Ireland, which... For me, and I know this probably annoys some people, I don't vote because I don't give them my sovereignty. I was born a free person. And if I vote, it's like I'm giving you authority to control over me, which means they don't have the right to do the crap that they're putting their laws, their acts and all this stuff. And I'm having better results with the things that I'm doing with fighting because I've been attacked again. I mean, I've had over 100 court cases. I've got bailiffs to back off. I've got detectives to back off. I've got courts to back off that were trying to get me in by actually claiming they were going for the corporate entity as opposed to the living soul. And when you start kind of going down that rabbit hole of the birth certificate and everything, it's like everything is so evil and orchestrated. And unfortunately, when you're trying to help people and tell, I mean, there's a load of people now are starting to follow this. And the podcast that I'm doing on sovereignty or say common law, they get massive, like they get, you know, not millions, but like thousands and thousands of you. And there's more people following it or asking, how do I do the course that the ones that I've been on, which is actually promising because it's like people are realizing that it's a whole game. We're all slaves. If you look at it, we're slaves. Like,
absolutely.
And people, you know, so once you realize, hey, I'm a slave to them, they're controlling me. And even if you look at all the wars going on at the moment and conscription and everything, it's like, I see the letters that they're sending. So basically, a load of the Ukrainians went to Ireland. The Irish people were, like, when the crisis happened, thrown out the street. I mean, I had a guy that was exposing all of that come on a few times on the show, but there was one woman living in a car with her three kids. You know, it got to that level. And I mean, I remember when I was going to the courts over there, there was just people living on the street, all Irish people kicked out of their houses. So the Ukrainians came over, plenty of houses for them there. But then they started that they needed to go to the war. And I saw that the letter that they were using was for the corporate entity. So if you actually sign it, what I've learned in life, once you sign, you've basically just agreed to what they've do. So you don't sign and they can't have nothing on you. Even in jails and everything is about the signature. The signature is so important.
Oh, man. And I, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that the country purportedly, or the powerful who purportedly represent me, have expanded and deepened this proxy war. And I mean, we are an empire, and it is only, and now that the world has turned its gaze away from Ukraine and to the Middle East, nobody talks about the hundreds of thousands that died because my country meddled when there could have been some sort of peaceful concord near the beginning of the conflict. Hundreds and thousands of more people have died. Those souls will not be remembered by anyone in the political class because there is a power auction that goes on in this country in Washington. And the politicians are the auctioneers, and they belly up to the trough, the military contractors belly up to the trough, and a lot of them are getting rich off these conflicts. So there's no longer even an anti-war party anymore. You used to be able to say that about the left, but they're not. Not in this country. Everybody's bellied up to the trough. So only the extremists are against war anymore here. And that's putting you at risk, you in particular, where you are, because you're right on the border of that conflict. And if it spills over into your country where you are right now, it'll be our fault in some measure, because that could have been avoided. And I don't say ours as if I take responsibility for what the powerful do in this country. I have no control over it whatsoever, but I can at least point it out. And I hope that you don't get your account suspended because of my mouth.
No, but you're dead right. And like, people don't realize, I mean, they're talking about the billions constantly, but people are thinking that they're sending this money over as aid and everything. What they're doing is they're funding the war machine, which is sending the actual equipment over there. So they're just kind of rolling the money back into their own pockets. And it's
such a money laundering scheme, you know, and it's poured, you call it petrol, poured petrol on the fire of corruption in Ukraine that was already existing. And you doubled the corruption in my country through the money laundering apparatus of these sorts of disbursements. Billions and billions of dollars every year going to this conflict. For what? The Russians aren't suffering because of it.
They're reducing the age as well that they're putting out. So they knew that if they'd done that at the start, you know, there'd be uproar. So that it was like 27 and now it's gone to 25 or 24. Eventually it's going to be 18. And I know they're trying to bring conscription down to 17. I don't know which country was that, but I heard that recently. Like, so it's like, yeah, in some countries, especially America, like you have to be 21 to have a drink, but you can go to war.
Oh, yeah. My son is 17 and he could be conscripted still legally through the draft service that we have. We have a military. Currently, we have a military that is, the volunteer force is at an all-time low because people
don't support the engagements, and they basically don't support the way that it's become infected with radical social justice. So young men are saying, nope, no thank you. And maybe young women are signing up a little more by comparison. But the fact is, a strong fighting force needs men, mostly. And that's just not happening. So at what point do these shortages necessitate them calling my son through conscription? I will be absolutely apoplectic, and I don't know what I'll do.
I think it's just down to the letter that they send you and how you respond to it, because they don't actually have the authority if you write it in the right way. So there is ways about it. And like, if we look at, was it BlackRock got the contract for rebuilding the Ukraine? You know, so it's like, it's not even finished and they're doing this. And there was one guy that I saw on TikTok, and he exposes a load of the corruption and everything. And he, at one stage, he was taking a picture inside in the supermarket of all the products and just saying each one is owned by the same company. So it was like 95%, even though you think you have a choice, you don't have a choice. But then he kind of went down further down the rabbit hole, and it was like looking at BlackRock and Vanguard and Fidelity and all this. And it's like a tiny percentage of the people own the shares in that. Then there's this tiny percentage that's actually like the Larry Finks and the share, you know, the employees, let's say, or but the rest is all owned by each corporation.
Yeah.
So each corporation is buying shares in the other corporation. So everything is owned by the corporations. Like, people think that Pepsi and Coke are against each other. They're owned by the same people. And it's like that for everything. And, you know, people don't realize that. And it's like the toxins of all the stuff that's going out there as well. It's, you know, people are being poisoned, but it's unfortunate. It's very hard to actually get it through to people.
Yeah, no. And I used to fear the idea that someone would call me a conspiracy theorist. But then I lived through COVID, and so did you. Now we know better. Conspiracies are not just theories. And we should have known that all along, going way back. But it's on full display now. And I think the best part of that, frankly, is that enough people start to realize that our information sphere is fractured enough that we can communicate and start to unpack some of these truths, despite mass conspiracies to suppress information, to suppress and censor people, that this mass censorship campaign is continuing and will continue into the future, despite our protestations. If we have time to build cryptographic means to not only express ourselves, but have more private communications, those are really, really important things that the developer community in the crypto space can be working on. Not just money, but communications and expression. So we have stuff like Nostr now, and a lot of the Bitcoiners love Nostr because it's such a decentralized system. It's really difficult to shut down speech on it. But people are still... there are tremendous network effects from some of these old world, you know, X Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of power still in those network effects. But once we can begin to migrate into some of these technologies like Nostr, it's going to be a game changer, because they won't be able to manipulate, control, and suppress anymore. It's getting easier every day for us to start to reconstitute the sense-making apparatus, collective sense-making apparatus. And that's not to say that there aren't a bunch of crazies out there, that there are actual goofy conspiracy theories out there. But some of the cream is rising to the top, and we're figuring out mechanisms for arriving at those truths. And once we do that, that is it's at least an important arrow in the quiver in this ongoing war, which is basically turned into information war, but it's going to turn into financial war like that. In fact, it already has.
with you know, like the conspiracy theory. I mean, that came from the John F. K. thing. Like, there was people kind of talking about, hey, this wasn't adding up, and they were spotting things. So it was the CIA or FBI, whatever combination of them, that kind of put that out. But what they're even doing now is, like, the way the propaganda is working is they'll put out something and they'll ban it, because people then will jump on the bandwagon thinking, oh, they're hiding this, this must be true. And they're just kind of catching people. So you have to be, it's
all you have to do is listen out for the terms misinformation or disinformation, and you know that someone is lying and someone is trying to obscure something. Just listen for those buzzwords and you'll know they don't have your best interest at heart.
Yeah.
I had two of my, I'm a writer. So I had two of my articles censored by Google during the pandemic. All of those things turned out to be, you know, I speculated based on the best available evidence. I said I was speculating. All those things turned out to be confirmed, but they were designated as misinformation and they were suppressed with the Google algorithm. So they didn't appear on any of the first couple of pages. I would then look at through other search technologies like Presearch, GoDaddy, and so on. Presearch is a one that's going completely decentralized soon, by the way. So your crypto community, if they don't already know about Presearch, will be interested to know that they already have developed nodes for a distributed and eventually completely decentralized search that is open source. In any case, that's, I hope, is going to be the Google killer. But you know, we should start using technologies like that. But at the end of the day, they, you know, Google, they basically censored me, whatever you want to call it. When you compare it with the other search, it was as plain as the nose on your face.
They removed a load of people that were promoting natural health and all stuff like that.
Yeah.
They just did, your website disappeared. But like, there was, you have Brave is one that I use, but there was the other one that DuckDuckGo. And apparently Google bought out DuckDuckGo. So once I heard that, then I stayed away from that one. But like, the thing is, because most times people, they have their own belief system, and the way the AI and all these social medias work is it keeps pushing your belief system, so you're convinced that you're correct. But what I say to people is, one, stay away from Google, try Brave. I mean, can that be compromised? Probably, but I mean, but what I say is, ask the question. Don't say, is something safe? Say, why is it not safe? And you'll get a totally different thing. And that's the thing, people have to change their question, and then you'll find out actually what's the truth. And like, you know, like if we look at the communications, WhatsApp, Telegram, they're all supposed to be encrypted. I personally experienced where WhatsApp was listening in, because somebody had asked me about a book and I mentioned it. Next, I see the ad coming up for that. There was somebody, I don't know, was it on Snap or something recently, on a plane, messing with their friends, just saying something silly, and got arrested for it. All these encryptions, there's no encryption. So with these social media, so people think, yeah, they're safe, right? There is nothing that's encrypted.
Yeah, I think you're right. And whether it is it's still an issue that we have to believe people who control some of these platforms, like the developer who's behind Telegram, for example, the Russian guy, I forgot his name. But, you know, he swears up and down that he is protecting people's privacy come what may. But are there technologies out there that the NSA uses, the other agencies use, the Five Eyes countries, you know, of the Anglosphere, the Anglophone countries, that are cooperating, coordinating, and spying on each other, even if it's against the law in this country to do so? It's not against the law for someone in Britain, say, to spy on me and then give the information back to my government. It's just like they're always a workaround. So we are now at the point where we're trusting folks like the Telegram guy or the Signal people, hoping that
that they are able to ward off these kind of attacks through these other technologies, or prevent the spying eyes of the surveillance state. But I'm with you. I'm not so sure. It's going to take a different kind of technological substrate that is much more along the lines of Nostr and that sort of thing to begin to really now end-to-end encryption. That's a tough one. I just don't know the technology well enough, but you know, there've got to be folks out there working on this tech, and we would much rather them work on this than the latest goofy, you know, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of goofy stuff in the crypto space, but we have to focus on what's most important right now, and that is protecting these inner spheres of sovereignty that we've taken for granted for far too long.
And if we look at, like, even say the domain names, because, you know, it's okay if you just have one domain name, but a lot of people, you know, 20 or 30 or... And then when you get, like, blockchain domain names, you pay once and that's it. And you have that domain forever. Whereas the other ones, you know, like, they've doubled in price in the last couple of years. And there's always extra stuff and there's always hassle. I mean, yeah. Everything is controlled. And if, like, the web, they can just turn it off in the moment. It's like, who's actually controlling everything? It's like, you know, we're giving power to these things. Whereas if they have the ability to take somebody's website down, that's dangerous.
That's right. Who's working on the decentralized web right now? We need that. It's we need to move away from HTML, HTTP and HTML as a whatever you call it, the protocols that were developed in the 80s. They're wonderful. They got us this far, but it's time for a new paradigm, and it's got to be a decentralized paradigm. It can't be sitting on a bunch of servers in California or in Utah or wherever, right? In suburban Dublin, like that can't happen. It needs to be that it's sufficiently distributed and decentralized that nobody can shut it down, just like the best cryptocurrencies. But we need to start extending these things, this kind of thinking, to the most important aspects of our lives. And I say that as one who can't do it myself. So I feel like I guess you'd call me an angel, depending on who you ask, but an angel standing on the shoulder of a community of software developers saying, don't forget where you came from, is my effort. You know, I write my books about this. You know, I write my Substack, underthrow.org, which is about underthrow. You know, underthrow being the idea that you would not overthrow power through violence, but underthrow it through technological means or through other means, through subversive innovation of any sort. If that's what we need to start thinking about, to think that you're going to go and cry your teardrop in the ocean and expect the tide to turn on voting day, that's your contribution to change, those days are over. Vote, you know, democracy is a great spectacle that gives us the illusion that we're in charge, but we are not in charge. And so our hope is the Rebel Alliance, you know, the guys who are really good at coding, the guys who are really good at developing or entrepreneurs. You know, you come up with a little franchise school that can be an escape hatch for people who are here in the government schools in the United States. That's not a whiz-bang technology. It's just a simple model that works. It can be replicated. Low-cost schools. Let's have 1,000 more low-cost schools, private schools, so that we can take our kids out of the indoctrination factories that now last from K kindergarten. Sorry, I don't know if you have that where
yeah,
you are, but
yeah,
kindergarten all the way to higher education is one long indoctrination factory. We've got to exit that. So I think, you know, going back to the threefold mandate of subversive innovation, we've got to lower the cost of exiting systems that aren't working. One way of doing that is to create alternatives that are low cost. Your kids are worth it.
But the thing is, I know you've had a few people on the show, and it's like, this is brilliant what you're kind of doing. But what I see, and it has to be like an open source that it's like millions of community that are kind of contributing to this, because everybody, when I put the gun to the head, what if somebody comes along with $1 billion checkbook and you just know by it that they would accept it? And they have a printing press. They'll just come over and take over if something brilliant has been created, then they have all the data from the people using it, and then just turn it against them. And like the only way, and it's the same, like if I'm constantly trying to think of a crypto that will work for the people. And the only thing that I can actually think of is that everybody in the world gets X, and that just becomes the exchange then. And it doesn't disappear. It's just moving around rather than from a crypto thing, because if from a fiat system, because they can always buy that. But if you have a system that doesn't increase, so like when somebody dies, that amount is disappear, or it's inheritance. And when somebody's created, it's like so-called birth certificate that money's supposed to be set aside. I mean, they deny that, but those people that actually are using that system getting money from it. But by having a system like that, I can't see any other way that it can work. It just has to be, we're all going to use this system, because no matter who creates what, if I've got the printing press, I just buy a load of it, and I'm quitting no matter what system is being used.
Yeah, that's a really tough situation that you're pointing out there. And I think, you know, one thing we're going to have to do is begin to, and I say this about myself too, and you know, I'm not savvy enough to make it complete yet, and I have friends who are, and bless them for that, but to begin to think of your crypto as your cryptocurrencies, hopefully some that protect privacy, as something that you never divest from. In other words, you treat it as a liquid, to something to be used. You're going to have natural incentives to hodl, obviously, because of the deflationary aspect of most cryptocurrencies. In other words, tomorrow it might be worth more, so you don't want to spend it. But at the end of the day, you've got to learn to operate within that ecosystem and not think of it as something that is liquid between, I know that's almost impossible because of network effects, but to the extent that we can start to think of these systems as being separate and not liquid between and among them, we'll be more protected from that kind of thing. Now, it's not going to be easy, and it's not to say that the powers that be aren't going to manipulate these markets. They absolutely will. There will be another crash because of it, you know. But more and more every day, there are there are cryptocurrencies that are finding toeholds. You know, I don't want to get into the debates about, you know, big blocks, small blocks with Bitcoin, or, you know, how good this privacy coin is versus that one. The idea is that this is an entire ecosystem of experimentation. The more experiments we have, the more we figure out things, the more robust the ecosystem will become. Just like real ecosystems, it's an evolutionary fitness landscape. One token within that evolutionary fitness landscape has a technology behind it that's constantly being tested. And in those tests, it becomes more and more robust as the developer community fixes those things that are its shortcomings. And in that way, we are, from an evolutionary standpoint, if we can stay in there, keep our wits about us, and not be horrified with any crashes, continue to try to learn how to migrate more of our lives from fiat world to crypto world, we will survive it. And here's why I think that. Right now, there is
The world debt is about $300 trillion, if I'm not mistaken, which is an unprecedented level of debt throughout the world. There will be a point at which the powerful are try to be their strongest, but they will actually be their weakest because there will be a collapse at some point. When that collapse comes, we have to be prepared to shift into these new systems and be at the vanguard of doing so. Because if you're taking truckloads of your euros or your dollar bills out to the market, you know you've reached Argentina status.
Or like
And
the
we can't
Deutsche
rely on.
Marks going back and
Exactly. Deutsche Marks. We're going to see those days come, but that has to be, we have to see that as an opportunity when that day arrives. To really, really, they're going to try to block the exits. They're going to try to regulate us out of existence. But when that day comes, and I think it's coming soon, I would guess in the next 5 years, we have to be prepared to seize that opportunity and use that collapse of these debt-fueled states to our advantage so that we can have greater solidarity, not only as a movement here mentally, but also in terms of a financial substrate infrastructure that allows us to flourish and thrive despite what the powerful are doing. I know that that sounds like a crazy vision, and I certainly wouldn't want, I don't want to wish this on anyone. But if it is meant to happen, and I think, especially in my country, every empire has to fall. You know, we look at Britain in 19, after World War II, after the Suez Canal affair, the British Empire was toast. It was over. And if not before then. And the same is for the United States Empire. I don't even think very highly of what China's doing right now. I think they're in a lot of trouble. And they have a lot of people who are very quietly perturbed by what their leadership has done. And economics are powerful forces. So a lot of times we see in dark times like that, the rise of totalitarian regimes, successful rise of totalitarian regimes. But with the technological tools we have today, I think that game has changed. At least I hope. We have to hope for that.
I mean, like if you look at, you know, all these countries, say like UK's and the States telling, you know, you Russia bad, Ukraine good. I mean, the UK still has a quarter of Ireland. They have the Falklands. They have Gibraltar. The US has military bases everywhere surrounding a country, and then they're wondering why the country actually hates them. I mean, how is that tolerate? And I know there's France and Russia, they have military bases as well. But I mean, if you look at what the UK has done, what they still do, who are they to say to anybody when they're still, you know, pillaging from the land of another?
That's right. I mean, this is it's utter parasitism and predatory behavior on the part of my country, and I am obliged to bankroll it. It's terrible, and so are you. You know, perhaps less so now due to where you live. I think it's, you know, speaking of Eastern Europe, I think there is a lot of promise in that region of the world. All over Eastern Europe, there is an attitude of we don't want to go back behind the Iron Curtain, never again. We don't want to live like that anymore. You know, Poland was on the forefront with the Solidarity Movement in the 80s. I remember that, and it was a powerful thing to see, even for me as a little kid. I don't think you're going to see that spirit go away anytime soon. As generations pass and collective memory evaporates, it could happen. Right now, there are very powerful people in the media, in
online in higher education and so on, and in the government schools, who are trying to erase our collective memory right now and rewrite history. And they're being successful at doing so. But if we have means to keep information on a blockchain and have that be viewable and visible by anyone who wants to view and visit it, that's, again, you know, censorship resistance. Not just money censorship resistance, but idea censorship resistance. We need to be continuing to build that every day.
If you just look at using that just for the history, because, I mean, so many people are believing what they're reading, and we've had a load of guests on when we do live shows, and their books have been removed because they don't want it to be shared, but yet they put out stuff. You know, like, you can get the World Economic Forum book, no problem. You can get all this crap out there that's been pushed out there, and all the decent stuff is hidden. So when you can do that through, like, blockchain, that the information is there and people can find it on a system that cannot be taken down.
Then that's right.
That's how you can do proper journalism. Because at the moment, like, I mean, you've probably been attacked. I mean, people just tell me, put my tinfoil hat on and everything. But yet, the information that you put out there, like, they can't debunk it. People are just attacking based on the information. I mean, they're just going from their heart because they're watching the TV. I mean, I don't watch the TV and the ads and the news and stuff like that. But if I do kind of go to someone's house or go home and telly's on it, I just see how good it is, the way that they do the propaganda and how fall for it. So I never, like, the problem with a lot of people in society today is they're attacking each other based on their belief system. And that's the wrong way to do it, because they're not wrong either, because they're just believing in what has been fed to them. It's just a case of that you have to get the proper information out there. And what I've learned is that, like, for anyone that's trying to get their information out, is you just kind of say, yeah, I used to think that as well. And then just kind of give them a little drip. And it just changes straight away, whereas most people, and I mean, we see it in the States, and you know, you're Democratic or you're Republican, and you're like Sleepy Joe or you like Trump, and they're just bouncing off each other, even in the household. Yeah. And who is that benefiting? And the benefiting?
Powerful are licking their chops.
They're just laughing.
They don't
care. They're like shaking the red and black ants, and they're just watching them fight, and they're like, oh, this is great, and they're putting their money down betting. So, like, people have to realize, don't be attacking each other, because that's what they want. Everybody has
this. They bet on both sides and they always win.
Yeah.
It's who's gonna auction power today? I compare it sometimes in one of my books. I open the book by comparing waking up one morning, picking up your smartphone, and you have two apps. Now, this is a very US-centric thing, but I think you'll get my meaning. You have two apps, the red app and the blue app. And that's DOS for you, the Democratic Operating System. Don't we want to upgrade from DOS? And that trope, that metaphor, puts into perspective how absurd our system is, at least here. I understand that there are parliamentary systems mostly in Europe, but these both systems have their own pathologies. Neither system... it works to expand the sovereignty of individuals and their communities. That's, you know, this idea of simple idea of federalism or subsidiarity. The Catholic Church gave us this idea of subsidiarity, which I think is a very powerful idea. That they haven't always lived by it, but the idea that you want to make decisions at the most local feasible level as an organization or a country. That's a very important principle because it allows for local engagement. You no longer may outsource your responsibility to your fellow man, to your neighbors, to distant capitals. The more they allow us to outsource our responsibilities to distant capitals and leave us, the only thing that they leave us is our amusements, our Netflix, our smartphones, our quibbling online about politics. We will genuflect to the church of politics because that's all it's left.
We won't spend time improving our communities. We won't spend time thinking about how to escape the fiat matrix. That's the, and if we're arguing in partisan warfare, wherever we are in the world, without realizing, just like you said, that there are basically a monoparty that's kept in line by powerful special interests, we're going to be suckers forever. We're going to leave our kids a world run for suckers by the powerful.
It was a therapist that I had on my show not so long ago, and she said from 2016, prior to 2016, she never heard anybody talking politics. And after that, it was all that it was doing. And I mean, I'm hearing that even, I think it was in Sweden, everybody bar one wasn't seeing a therapist. So everybody is like going through this, the turmoil, the stress levels and everything. And it's just getting worse and worse instead of kind of, because the system is seriously broken and just stepping back. So I know you talk about like the, like Freemasons, because it's something that I've touched on a lot of the things. And I mean, I have seen, and just for those, like, because I know a few people that have been in, and there's good ones, and there's obviously evil as you can get ones, because there's friend of mine, and I like this, I did, it's done intentionally to make it look like, hey, look at us, we're doing this, we're helping people and everything. So they get normal, genuine ones that are actually helping charities and everything. And then there's the others. And I've like, I've heard of people, the things that they have to do, be buried alive, do sexual stuff and all weird things. But a load of the presidents and everything have all gone through these secret groups. So, I mean, for me, immediately, all that stuff has to be just dismantled. I mean, obviously, because they can hide it. But, you know, nobody, because you can infiltrate them if they do. I went to one in Ireland. It was an open house, and I had heard of somebody that was in it, and I was just curious. I said, I want to go. I didn't know at the time, because this is going back over 20 years ago. I didn't realize that how bad they were. But I went in there thinking, I'm going to learn this because I love reading and everything. And I wasn't impressed at all. Like, and I never even applied or anything. But when you look at the amount of people that are involved with these organizations, and there's a lot of them, there's Skull and Bones, there's a lot of different kind of ones that are going, you never hear anything that's actually good. I'm not talking about the small little groups that people know about and they're helping the charities, but it's always connected with something evil.
Well, let me present a challenge, because we were connected perhaps with the idea that I've started a little secret society. You might want to call it the Freemasons of Decentralization. We only have about 20 members right now, maybe 25. But the idea of this is, as to say, I hope you're wrong. In other words, in our clandestine activities, and I'm not saying, and look, I'm not saying that we're going to go around doing awful things in secret. The idea is that we want a private organization that is going to be dedicated to the kind of mission, morality, and sense of life meaning that I was talking about. In fact, we have seven dimensions that represent the spine of our organization. That's mission, mystery being the idea that we talk about deep philosophical things into the night with our cigars and our whiskey, because that makes life great, right? Morality, means, how are we going to realize the mission? Meaning, which is, how do we derive a sense of deep fulfillment out of our activities and our life in pursuit of the mission? And mastery. I don't know if I listed all seven there, but mastery is the sense that we're constantly helping each other improve. So I believe in some sense that the world is really starved for community right now. People are leaving, have been leaving their churches for decades and leaving their community groups. But what they forgot is that they derived some sense of spiritual nourishment from that. And I'm not saying that you should be this sect or this religion or that, just the idea of the practice, spiritual practice with other people in some sort of ritual, ceremonial terms,
or some sort of initiatic experience where once you're in, you feel that there are people there to lift you up, help you improve, and operate in service of a mission. That sense of the practice of the virtues is something that we want to bring back, where that's been utterly lost in our contemporary times. And I believe people are starved for it. And I believe that that can animate a lot of what you and I would call the crypto movement or the sovereignty movement, because people remember their moorings. People remember why. Answer the question, why? The whys and wherefores are what animate us. And if we can gather as a fraternity or a siblinghood, if you like, because women have been drawn to this, then we can do things together that are in service of a mission. And at least if we go down, we go down together in the face of all these problems. So that's sort of the idea. Oh, there was one other dimension, is mutualism. And that's the mutual aid aspect. It used to be in the United States that, and I don't want to bang on about this, but I think this is an important thing. Before the 20th century, at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, 1 in 4 people was a member of a mutual aid society. Sorry, 1 in 3 was a member of a mutual aid society. That was the wealth, that was the social safety net. People wove it together in community, in person. There was none of this outsourcing their responsibilities to distant capitals with the expectation that the people wouldn't take that power and use it against you. There was an in-person showing up for each other. Every Wednesday night, we gather, we break bread, we talk about things. I help someone who's needs help. I get help when I need it. Someone has a family member die, we pay for the funeral, that kind of stuff. We work in mutuality. And so that all of these dimensions are missing. And so for me, the idea of starting an organization like this is as a renaissance of these really important dimensions of our lives that, frankly, worshiping in the church of politics and being on our smartphones all the time has caused.
Depending on how it's structured, you can get a tax exemption as well, because a lot of the organizations, obviously we know about churches, but even cults have actually created that they're tax exempt. You can use the money to a lot better benefit when it's under the right management.
That's right. That's right. And it's, there are a couple of models or structures that allow for this in my home turf. we're looking very closely at those right now, but whether and to what extent it is a nonprofit, a for-profit, or some other model is going to depend on what makes us the most robust and least vulnerable to attack. Because at the end of the day, if the government awards your corporation, they can take it away.
Yeah. And that's like people looking for licenses and everything. It's like you're going to the government saying, can I have a license to get married? And then you have to go and get permission to get divorced. When you think of it, it's insane. And also, if I want to get a certain document, say a passport, I have to go and get my birth certificate, which I have to queue up and wait and spend half a day to do, to give it to another government organization. And it's the same with the driving license. There's so much crap that's just used in life to suck your time and energy and your money out of you. And we need Absolutely. To stop that immediately.
This is I'm talking to an Irishman, so this might sting a little, but The one thing the bloody English gave the world that was great was the common law. And we've got to migrate away from the statute law, this Justinian statute law, and back to the common law. That's going to be very helpful in making sure power stays in check.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Listen, Max, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, and I know that I'll have to get you back because I want to read your books and go deeper. And but you might let people know where they can find you, your Substack, your website, and all the different things.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to do so. My Substack is a great way to reach me and a great way to support me and read my stuff. It's at underthrow.org. Excuse me. Or if you're in Ireland, it's undertrow.org. Is that right? Is that right, Roy?
The draw, I suppose so.
That's right. But thank you so much for having me today. I had a ball talking to you.
Very much, Max. And I'll make sure I put the links as well as the links for your books as well, both on the audio and the video. So,
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
okay, thank you. So, that's all for the Awakening Podcast and the Crypto Podcast. You'll find me on awakeningpodcast.org and thecryptopodcast.org. Sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, share with your friends, and comment. Make sure you let us know what you thought about what we were discussing. As long as you're not abusing us, it stays there, even if it's in a disagreement. Until next week, take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.